Hello, you're listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters for the week ending Friday, 6th of March. We're broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Wurundjeri Country, Australia. Coming up on this podcast, Emma Jones of 1200 Techniques and Cool Out Sun drops in to share some tips on getting into a creative flow state.
And what's in a name? I mean, I changed mine to Ronnie after a fight with a barista. And also, do you need a kids menu or a Negroni before 8? We discuss what makes the perfect neighbourhood spot with Besha Rodell.
The fireys are called on some feckless neighbours, and Friday funny bugger Alex Ward plays around with some awkward encounters. Triple R. Enfa Jones is a hip-hop artist, producer, lyricist and lecturer whose musical projects include Afro-funk powerhouse Cool Out Sun as well as ARIA award-winning 1200 Techniques and solo work including his debut album Cause and Effect, which featured collaborations with Roots Maneuver and a music video directed by Heath Ledger. The artist and educator is this month lending his deep talent stack to the Brimbank Writers and Readers Festival with an event titled Flow State, Crafting Hip-Hop with Enfa Jones. And to tell us about it, the inveterate creative with a Masters in Music joins us now. Enfa Jones, welcome to Breakfasters.
Pleasure to be here. What a way to start the day.
What's caught your eye creatively lately? Where are you? How are you?
I'm okay. Creatively, I don't know. I was just having a chat outside. Creatively works like a collage of pictures of ideas. So I try to write. I'm always trying to write lyrics, but I write a lot of just stuff that doesn't land. But I never delete. I just keep writing, keep making things. And then like often if I'm working with, say, Sensible J with Cool Out Sun, he makes such beautiful music. It's tricky to write sometimes. I can't nail it. But I just keep writing bits and bits. Mm. And then suddenly, after like a year of hopeless fodder, things just all start to piece together. So
wow.
I'm just always in that kind of state. It was the same back with 1200 Techniques, although I think back then, when your young mind, everything just lands because it's the first time you've written. So everything's just like, oh, wow, that's a dope idea. But as you get older, like, I've done that. How do I do this? How do I say it better?
Like youthful.
Yeah, and there's something good about being young because you're naive and you think you're the first person to ever say something and you're really not, but you believe it, so you go for it, you know?
And yeah. You're saying it from your guts. You're like,
yeah, so you got to fight to maintain that sense.
You're always sort of problem-solving in your mind.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of artists seem like space cadets because we're just constantly problem solving in our minds. I often tell students when I'm working with them, like, you really need to write things down, like keep a calendar, work out your timetable, because you're going to be late and everyone's going to think you're hopeless. Not that you're hopeless, you just were overly optimistic about your time, or you were doing 10 things in your head that you could have written down and solved.
I need to write that down.
That you meant, yeah, you know.
Wow, what good advice. Did you stumble into this vibe of guru? I mean, were you an inherent teacher? Is there something about you that think you're a natural teacher?
Oh, yeah, no, I was born a guru, hey. No, honestly, I was an unusual kid, but I had a very unusual older brother. My brother Kabar is the whole reason I ever found music and did anything creative. Like, he should be a legend of Australian hip-hop. He was on the first 1200 Techniques album on a few songs, but, like, he was amazing. And as a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, he was making me as a 10 and 11-year-old write down notes of what I'd do each day and plan my days, and we used to sit there formulating how to write songs. Like, he was so far ahead. And if it was today, we'd probably be like TikTok sensations. But, you know, it's 80s, 90s, and you're just out in the suburbs of Swanview in Perth, and it's hot, and it's like the back of the desert, and no one lives near you, and you're the only people who do this stuff. So it's just like...
That's beautiful. Is that kind of a blessing, though, like being a bit more removed?
In a way, I don't know. I can't say. Your mind goes, well, if we could do all that with nothing, wonder how it would have been if we'd grown up elsewhere, you know? Would it have been more impactful and immediate? I don't know. I guess less distractions, means of survival and so on.
It's like when you often talk about when, especially in the top end, you see all the musos coming out of there, elite, and then sometimes you see where they jam and it'll just be a tin shed out the back of the footy ground and they're just in there shredding, and it's just like part of everyday life where you have to create your own entertainment.
I wonder if those outer parts of Australia where all the magic seems to happen is what Australia is to the world, because all the magic seems to happen out of Australia.
Yeah.
But it's like the Swan View and those tin sheds, are they the equivalents.
Yeah, you know? Maybe.
Because I think, you know, we get so used to how amazing people are around Brunswick. It's just like, oh, yeah, I went to see this yesterday and that yesterday and they were playing. And they're all international level artists, but we're all local because it's so hard to go anywhere. Mm. I sometimes wonder, like, is it just that distance that makes people sort of see further ahead or a dream of more? Or create only comparing to the records they listen to. I think sometimes people, I think when I'm around here, it's like everyone's so dope, they're just kind of like, oh, yeah, I can just play to that level. And it's amazing because you've got, like, Surprise Chef living next door or something.
Yeah.
But when you're in that tin shed, you just, you're listening to Surprise Chef or whoever, like it's the ultimate level or Dimensions and Groove back in the day or something from New York. And so that's what you aspire to.
Yeah.
So out of these tin sheds comes
love it. The tin
diamonds.
Shed of global culture,
yeah.
Australia.
Yeah.
What's your approach to failure and how its association with play?
Oh, I don't know how you claim failure. I would say if you look at failure, I'm more of a failure than a success. Like, I've probably failed so many more times in the scheme of things. Like, you know, Cause and Effect, say, is an album. You know, Heath did a video. We did all these amazing things, Roots Maneuver, but I didn't get any, like, awards or tours off it because there was no plays. So it's like, did I fail? But then it's like, well, I made this really good album. It's actually in its 20th year this year. So, you know, the last Cool Out Sun album, Lion is a Lion, we got voted, what, Double J voters, number 10 best album in the year worldwide, but it's not circulated on the level. So is that failure? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What is failure? I had a kid in a youth justice center ask me, because he's an aspiring MC, he goes, how do you deal with the haters? And I said, well, it only matters if I believe them.
Mm.
Right? So I guess failure depends on what your goal is.
Yeah.
If you can create and make, then you've already succeeded.
And what about risking looking dumb?
Oh, well, we all look dumb all the time, don't we? So, I mean, I'm risking looking dumb just coming and having a chat.
That's right. But we're calling this a workshop.
Yeah.
You know, like it's – so we're expecting beats, flow, creative challenges, an atmosphere that encourages boldness, honesty.
Mm.
Now, that would be some people's – I don't know.
Idea of hell.
Yeah, and really to go into a space and be vulnerable like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point. You think about all, like, the most hardest MCs. They all sat down and decided to share, all the hardest rockers and punk. They all allow themselves to share and say the words. I was thinking earlier today, like, you know, we all carry stories. And if we don't get them out, then they just tend to live in us and create this sort of identity of no one sees me or hear me. Whereas if you can get something out, even if it's on paper and it's in a book and it's out of you, then you can kind of keep moving forward from those stagnant moments. I feel like songs are stagnant moments that, if that makes sense, that we record and print, or a story that's recorded and printed, and then it can exist outside of yourself and you don't have to carry it all the time. You might be related to it as the person and the author, but I feel like it allows you to move on and create space in your sort of emotional hard drive for new experiences.
You can write
experiences.
And forget, get out of your system.
Mm.
Do they get emotional sometimes with what you unlock out of them?
Sometimes, I think so. But most of the time that emotion's pretty, like, joyous, like a sense of even, like, I've worked with kids as young as grade 4 or 3 right through to adults, and it's a similar process. And as long as you can avoid the fear and just allow yourself to jump in and try things and just – I was like, my favorite quote, I think it's my quote, I didn't read it, I said it, is, you know, don't try to be right, just write.
Good.
So we just write and see what comes of it, because I don't even know what I'm writing. I just do things and then it starts to make sense.
What's the longest lag between having an idea and you didn't know where it belonged versus till it eventually found a home?
I was just going through a song recently, a new song with Jay that's been quite a lag, but the longest is probably a song we did called Auntie Modu. Sensible Jay gave me this beat, and I reckon I had the beat for about a year and a half. And it changed when we finally recorded it, but I must have written 30 songs over that, and it just wasn't the right one. It just didn't make sense. And then my Auntie Modu was passing away, and there was a quote from her at her funeral, which was, someday come, someday go, Nasa Gadse. And I was like, oh. that's it.
That's
and
the
then
fit.
The song just fell out of my face onto the page.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you sometimes just got to keep moving. I see it like as a track athlete. How many times do you run sub 10? It doesn't matter. You just keep aiming to run it. You have bad races, bad seasons, and then boom, you're 9.92, and then only some people can keep running sub 10s consistently, and they're amazing. Same with musicians who keep hitting. It's just amazing.
Right? The percentage of sub 10s out of someone's running career is probably 0.0001.
If you get one sub 10, you can say, I ran sub 10 once. Like if I had a karma one time, I got that, you know, like I did that once, you know, it's amazing.
Well, do you ever go back? Like, so you said you wrote 30 songs for that beat. Like, do you ever go back to those
ideas?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You look at them, think of them, and then go, oh, that could actually work here, because just because it didn't make sense on that music. The music was emoting something more than what, or something different to what I was trying to write. And if you're honest with yourself, you'll know. You can't be like, oh, I suck. I'm terrible. I'm going to throw it away. Don't do that. But you allow those thoughts to stay, and you find wherever it is those thoughts are traveling. It's almost like I always see it like catching spirits. Sometimes they're talking to you and you're just misinterpreting it, or you're getting in the way. And if you just allow it to come through, it lands.
Mm. In terms of stuff landing and truth, is truth a perennial, or do you look back at stuff and go, oh, that doesn't ring as true as I thought it did at the time? Or
I think, you know, what's that saying? Never let truth get in the way of a good story.
Yeah.
I think it depends. Some people are very truthful. Some people are really good exaggerating the truth. Some people don't mind, you know, if like a footy game, if you can cheat a bit, why not, right? If you win, if you get away with it. The Maradona fist of God, you know, it's like whatever, it's a game, right? Let's see if we can win. What can we get away with? So for me, the truth is essential. I'm very much like that, but I don't think it's necessarily necessary as long as the story is reaching what it needs to reach and hopefully, you know, affecting others positively.
Cool. Well, what a fun. Is it an afternoon, a day? Tell us how Flow State operates.
Well, it's not that long. It's quite an impactful, like, quick movement event. So I was just trying to look at the exact time again. But I think it's from 3 to, like, 4:30 on March 15th. So we'll be doing, like, a series of different styles of writing approaches and quick attacks and quick reflections and sharing. I think sharing is a major part, because once you share, you actually go, oh, wow, this is bad, or this is really good, or this isn't as bad as I thought. So I think sharing is a really important part.
Nice. Well, head to brimbanklibraries.vic.gov.au for more information about Flow State, Crafting Hip Hop with Enfer Jones, which is part of the Brimbank Writers and Readers Festival. Enfer Jones, what a great pleasure to chat with you this morning.
So good.
Such a pleasure.
Triple R. I ordered a coffee yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah. End of story. Discuss. Woo-hoo. Go. No. I made the mistake. I didn't use my coffee name. Usually my coffee name is just my middle name. I just go with Anne. Simple. Good.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah. Bronwyn has always been more of a struggle. It's probably me. I think I mumble a bit. But I went up and I ordered coffee. And he said, what's your name? I said, Bronwyn. And then the barista said, Ronnie.
Oh, God.
And I said, and I just went, yeah, that'll do.
Ronnie is good.
Ronnie. Yeah, like, who cares? As long as I get this flat white. But I was just like, yeah, that'll do. And then she got upset and a little bit defensive. And she said, well, if it's not your name, what is your name? And I was like, well, we've already done this dance and we're at Ronnie, so let's just leave it at that. And she was like, no, what is your name? I was like, well, it's Bronwyn, but Ronnie is fine. And then I'm arguing with her to just put Ronnie on the cup.
Now.
I'm Ronnie now.
Bronwyn's dead.
And Bronwyn's, Bronwyn's dead to me. I'm Ronnie. The fight just ended in she just made the coffee and said oat flat white, and then name got dropped altogether.
But the oat flatty for you.
Yeah, I was really pushing for Ronnie at the end.
That's... Separately a little bit, do people, you know how names conjure different emotions or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Do baristas, I know they've got the order, but do you reckon they would go harder with Ronnie than an Ant? Like if you ask for like extra hot or whatever, or I don't know.
Like above and beyond?
Yeah, they'll like, Ronnie can take it.
Ronnie... Yeah, this one's for Ronnie. N is a bit soft, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might be right. Oh, but
and now, was there a humiliating moment? So you go through the dance, you mumble it. So Ronnie's the latest example. Usually what happens when you've leaned on Bron? How come you don't say Bron?
Because it's too – they still get it wrong. I don't know. I think it's me. I think I'm not enunciating properly. But I get – so I've had Ronnie. I've had Barbara.
Barbara's good.
I've had them pretend they've heard my name and then I just get a flat white called out and it's just got a scribble on the top of the cup.
Oh, yeah.
They pretended they're right.
Yeah. That is good.
I had the most trouble in America with my name because that it's so foreign to them over there.
We don't exist.
But I was in a – I was in New York and I was in a a late night audience and this woman with a clipboard was like checking names at the door and she goes, what's your first name? And I said Bronwyn and she got really annoyed at me and she said, I asked – for your first name. And I was like, that is my first name. And she's like, oh, okay, sorry. Oh, yeah, you're on the list. Go through.
Yikes.
That is.
So what do you think was going through? Because the barista, whoever's taking the order, doesn't mm-hmm. want to feel as though they're partaking in a lie.
I guess, yeah. They were really annoyed.
Well, they're trying to respect you.
And I was like, absolutely don't.
Yeah.
I don't need your
I don't
respect.
Need it. I'm quite happy to be Ronnie. I might change my coffee name to Ronnie.
I got a friend, her name is Kerry Lee, mm-hmm. and when she got, I think it was a bank card or some kind of card that you'd put in your wallet, when it arrived, it said kerosene.
And
way
that's
off.
Way off. Is she just kerosene
it's
now?
It's not even a name.
You don't think like the person typing it into the system wasn't like, should I double check this? Yeah. Kerosene.
I feel like this was pre-AI too. They're just like, kerosene.
Guess it is.
Kerosene.
That's amazing. Was it reminiscent of your mate, Bronwyn Bishop?
Ooh, what a... I don't know if she's my mate.
Oh, no. She came up the other day. Only because the kerosene, famously, she was running the kerosene baths.
Ah.
Mm. But that's yonks ago.
Another one that came. Oh, so, yeah, I love the. I'm with you on the coffee name. And I usually put down just a name that I'm never going to use, but there is something to being like an old name that is a bit more clear.
Yeah. What do you go with?
I go with Brian.
Brian?
Yeah. It's just kind of easy. I don't know. It cuts through the noise. Anyway, sometimes I also, my coffee name just slips into chats and people that I may or may not ever see again. And I thought I had done that at Meredith. I can't remember. I don't even remember how it came up, but I was in the middle of the Supernatural amphitheater. And, you know, you've had a few refreshments. The sun's gone down.
Couple of coffees.
Someone came up to me and they were just like, your name's not Brian. I was like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Why? You said your name was Brian. I was like, whoa, how? That's an amazing memory, like facial memory. And also they remembered my name that wasn't even...
So is this someone you ordered a coffee off of or just someone...
Yeah, just a passing by, fleeting... I thought it was a fleeting moment, but...
They came back for you. You got to be careful.
Isn't it interesting that Jace's coffee name is not a million miles from your real name?
Yeah, and it works for you.
Mm. The bee's cutting through, whereas you've abandoned the bee.
I needed a little, like, My Fair Lady.
Did you say Anne? It is Anne.
Anne.
And are you worried that when that comes out, is that always clear or do you have a delay of, like, that's me or?
Oh, yeah, it takes a minute sometimes. I forget that I'm Anne. Yeah. That's the downfall of the...
Ronnie. Yeah. I'm into Ronnie.
Ronnie?
Ronnie's
Maybe
good.
I should just change it. It's a good show name.
It's a great show name.
Independently yours, Triple R.
102.7.
I'm hungry. I want something to eat. Something with a crunch and very sweet.
Besha Rodel is with us for Food Interlude, ahead of your massive show on Sunday, filling in for Eat It.
Morning, yes, Besha. Very exciting.
No,
my first hosting gig.
Massive.
I know.
We'll talk a bit more about that later, but where are we going in a culinary sense?
I wanted to talk about the kind of concept of neighbourhood restaurants and the perfect neighbourhood restaurant. I've been thinking a lot about that over the last couple of weeks. My review this week is of Daphne in Brunswick East. I just moved to East Brunswick from Carlton. This is a massive move in my life, as much as it's only a few blocks, but it feels very, very different. And I've just been thinking so much. Daphne is the second restaurant from a really great restaurateur, Hannah, who also owns Etta, a couple doors down from Daphne. Etta is a very kind of ambitious restaurant, you know, date night, like more expensive. And I really think that Hannah Green, who is the restaurateur behind both of them, thought really hard about what does this neighborhood want for her second restaurant, and really, really tried to provide that. I actually lived over very close to these restaurants when I first was back in Australia 8 years ago, and the neighborhood has changed so much. And B East, the kind of beer and music venue that's right next door, just closed. And so I've just been thinking about like that neighborhood and how it's changing and what people need from a neighborhood restaurant. Like Daphne is very sophisticated, but you know, affordable. You can use it for kind of whatever you want. It has a kids menu. It has $15 martinis on Mondays. And I was just kind of wondering, like, do the people in the neighborhood who used to go want cheap beer and like grungy music next door, now do they want martinis and a kids menu? Like, is that what is happening there? And I was thinking about, like, if you live in South Yarra, maybe Francois is the perfect neighborhood restaurant. Do you know what I mean? Like, what does each neighborhood need as its perfect neighborhood restaurant? Mario's is about to turn 40, and I'll probably talk about that in depth when it happens. But, you know, for Fitzroy, for that part of Fitzroy for so many years, like, I feel like that's the perfect neighborhood restaurant for Fitzroy. Mm. So, like, what do we need in our neighborhood restaurants,
I guess? Yeah, and I suppose... Does it depend on the neighbourhood itself, or what's already pre-existing in the neighbourhood?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. I think about when I was in my early 20s and I was living in Brooklyn, and to me at that point, the perfect neighbourhood restaurant had to be open really late and serving food really late. Now I don't care that much about that for me, and different neighborhoods would need that. But I do think that this idea that, and I think part of what is so good about Daphne and what is great about Mario's, for instance, is that it kind of, Mario's in particular, provides whatever you need it to be at any given time. So you can go in there and have breakfast. It's the only place in town that serves coffee all day, every day. Like, it does not stop at 3:00. Praise baby Jesus. You know, you can get a Negroni at any time of day. You can basically, you know, you used to be able to get Vegemite toast at any time. I don't think they serve Vegemite toast anymore, which I'm a little bummed about. But, you know, you can have a bowl of pasta at any time of day. So I really think it's that thing of like, utility is one of the things that I think people miss out on talking a lot about in restaurants. They talk about decor, food, service. But for me, utility is just as important as any of those things, right? You need to be able to use it for whatever you need it for. Do you need a date night spot? Do you need a place with a kids menu? And can somewhere effectively do all of those things and do them really well and seamlessly and have it feel as though they're not trying to, you know, be 70 different people. Like, it doesn't feel like a kind of schizophrenic thing. And Daphne does that particularly well, I think.
It's so interesting. As you're talking, I'm reminded of, like, a crowd-pleasing venue in the suburbs might be, and I get a lot of invitations here, to, like, an RSL.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Mm. And, I mean, that is the beauty of a really good pub is, and, you know, I think that pubs – struggle a little bit these days with it because it used to be pretty easy. You had the front bar, which is just kind of sloppy, or for like the old drunk blokes. And then you had the dining room, which, you know, back in the day was literally the ladies' room. But a good pub will be somewhere that you can go to get pissed if that's just what you're doing, or you can bring your mum and have a nice roast. You know what I mean? Like that utility. And the RSL is that for lots and lots, especially little towns rurally.
Yeah. Maybe we should go back to putting the sloppy drunk blokes in and then we have our own room.
Yeah, I mean, definitely like actually almost has a version of that. Yeah, where you sit up front to drink the martinis and you sit in the back if you want the kids' menu. Yeah, like right. That's, you know.
I don't want to speak out of school or throw something out there, but Michael Harden, our you know, former food interluder, mentioned the place in the CBD to me, Elio's place.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think also the CBD is an interesting one because what is a neighborhood restaurant in a CBD? But I do think that places like that, you know, neighborhood like the European to me is the perfect CBD neighborhood restaurant because you need somewhere you can go hang out after work and have wine and then stick around if you want and have dinner. Those type of places. But it's a totally different, I think, project to say, how do I do something like that in the CBD? Because very few people actually live there. Yeah, you know,
It's changed. I feel like it used to have a neighborhoodness to it. But
yeah, I actually grew up there. I grew up in a house for a little while behind the Windsor Hotel that used to be. It was a former brothel, and now sadly it's an office. But it was an and for us the perfect neighborhood restaurant was the Waiters Club because you know again really. Fair, you know, you could go there for anything. You could go there to drink too much wine. You could go there to eat too much pasta. I still love that place. You know?
So what? Because sometimes when you're in a neighbourhood, you can feel when they don't have something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people in Melbourne focus on. We did a story in The Age a while ago about like this neighborhood that had no cafe and people were just like horrified. For me, when I was a kid, it was if you didn't have a milk bar, you know, and now nobody has a milk bar except Clifton Hill. Clifton Hill has like 4 milk bars, which I'm jealous of.
True.
But yeah, I think there is that. And the really smart young restaurateurs, I think, pick out those places and say, let's go make the perfect neighborhood restaurant here. I think about Arnold's in Kensington across the street from the... I mean, Kensington had a few restaurants, but nothing that felt like that, like, living room of the neighborhood. You know, I think that...
Like a Loxaking kind of...
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. Loxaking was as close as it got. But you want somewhere that you can have a cocktail, that you can, you know... That you can use for whatever you need to use it for. And I think that's a smart thing for people to do if they're looking, you know, Fitzroy probably doesn't need another restaurant, but there's lots of places that do.
There's a shout out to the Galleon, which is, they say, not a restaurant, but very important cafe, suspect in St Kilda, that's remained mostly unchanged for more than 30 years. And I've seen you write previously about it doesn't have to be the best.
No.
At what it does?
No.
The best. Well, I'll let you speak to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's the perfect is the enemy of the good is one of those kind of things with places like Francois, I think, or probably this place that has been unchanged, is sometimes if you do something really, really well and you're not trying to, you know, be the best or have a line around the block or whatever, you're just trying to serve the people that you know need to be served and do it consistently.
Yes.
That is, you know, that's kind of, there's a magic to that.
Yeah. You're right. There are phases in your life when you need these places, or there are some times where I might think of a place as daggy.
Yeah.
And then I enter a phase where I lose that.
Yeah, like, absolutely. I feel like Melbourne needs to let go of that. Like, and they are, I think they are, but like, especially when I came home and I was very nostalgic for a lot of places, but people were like, why are you so obsessed with Mario's? I'm like, mate, if we lose Mario's, like, can you imagine how, you know, I can't imagine Melbourne without it. So the new places are great. I'm excited by new restaurants all the time, but I'm very into the personality and the history of the daggy neighborhood restaurant.
Yeah, it's so true. I've always had this idea that if you go in somewhere and there's people that are 50 plus in the kitchen,
yeah,
Like, they don't care about being cool.
No,
they're
I
happy
want
to be daggy.
This is I have this like fantasy of doing an awards program that is just for like the mean old bloke who's still at it. Like, you know, forget the 30 under 30. Yeah, I want yes. like yeah, like because there's only
card.
Like a handful of them. The 10 over 60 who like have just been at it forever, yeah. you know, and are just still churning, just grinding because that's what they're doing.
Yeah, you can't
I love
get
those
that on
guys.
Instagram. That's no, just you can't. That's the real deal.
Yeah,
you know?
They're probably a bit problematic. But
Liz and I, on our very first date, had the rudest waiter in the world, and I think that's why we're still together.
Really,
it was such a great bonding thing. We had to talk about it.
This is like an old school, just like not
yeah,
having it. Yeah.
Not having it. How's your day going? And he said, "Well, I can't get it back."
I love that guy.
Now, International Women's Day falls on a Sunday this year, which means eat it, midday. Now, what's happening?
So it's a takeover. The ladies are taking over. Yay. So I will be hosting in place of Cam, and we've got a couple of really great guests lined up, some fun music and some fun stories. You can listen to hear me fall on my face because I've never done it before, or, you know, it'll be go down
trial.
In the history as the beginning of my great radio career.
Love that. Okay. Eat it, midday on Sunday. Besha Rodel filling in. Thanks so much, Besha.
Thanks for having me.
Woo!
That's right. Triple R.
I've got some noisy neighbours.
Which, yeah.
Yeah. And it's whatever. It's fine.
It's but not possums.
It's not possums. It's people. It's a family. And that's okay. They can make some noise. But I don't know how they're doing this. But every night, the minute I start to drift off is the minute they come home from wherever they are. And that's when they're like, you never hear anyone else in the building, but this family comes in, they're loud, they're talking, they're screaming, they're running, they're bashing every surface they walk past. I don't know. I don't know why it's so loud, but every night. And then the other night I was like, right, it's like a me problem. I go to bed very early.
Mm.
So they're allowed to make a bit of noise.
Yep.
At like 8:30 on a good night. But I was like, I'll stay up till they get home and then I'll go to bed because that's probably better than being interrupted.
Yes.
They stay up 10 o'clock, they're not home, 10:30. I'm thinking, all right, they've got kids, the kids will be in bed. They mustn't have gone out tonight. As soon as I'm down, there's just like marching band through the building and it's driving me crazy. But the other thing they've done at the moment.
How old do you think the kids are?
They'd be under 10, I'd say.
Wow.
Yeah.
Late night? Were you worried about
them? Yeah. I can't make it that late. I don't know how these kids are. But they've recently started doing renos. So the loudest people in the world are now doing the loudest activity, which has been a nightmare.
That's
and
good.
And I think they must be retiling the bathroom. So I think tiles are coming off. Then the tiles are getting thrown outside into like
Big echoey area.
Yeah, it's a huge echoey area. But they created this, I don't know how they did it, this huge dust cloud that was so big and so thick it set off the fire alarm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's serious.
Yeah, the fireys came out. But here's the twist. They went inside the house and pretended they weren't home.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Quiet as a mouse. Turns out when they want to turn the volume down, they've got it in them. And they just hit out. And then...
That's revolting.
It's awful. And people were coming. So also, cats in the pram again, another fire alarm. So we're cats in the pram outside. Other people from the building are knocking on their door. They've taken the fireys up to the door. They're like, it's these guys. This is what happened. They are home. They're pretending they're not home. They would have been able to hear all of this and they just stayed locked in the apartment. It's unreal.
What are you teaching your kids about accountability?
Zero.
Like, you don't need
if
it.
If you close your eyes.
You don't need it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
And there's those people, they were almost like pitchfork angry mob outside, like, if you're sending us a fine, send it to these guys in this apartment, because so, they set it
off. So they've created enemies.
They have, absolutely.
And did you get the impression that other people were already kind of irked by them from previous behaviour, not just this incident, or they were new to the party?
No, I get the impression other people are irked by them. It's not the first time they've hid in the apartment as well, because I think they were leaking into the apartment downstairs and that apartment was up knocking on their door one night being like, I know you're home. Your bathroom is leaking into my apartment.
Ah.
And it took them – and then eventually they were like, oh, hi, were you knocking? And they're like, yes. Anyway, and then listen, I just – hide behind the blinds and take it all in.
They're hot. So it's two times they've hid.
Mm-hmm. And but then they're so loud. It's like a parade's going off in the building when they come home.
Because being loud is one thing, but if you really, really want to level it up, you need you need plumes.
You need plumes, yeah.
Of any variety. Anything that's going to set off an alarm and you won't. Even small children can make massive vibrations with their stomping on the ground.
Oh, you need a lot of that. There's so much stomping.
You want some reverb coming through the house from the tiles being ripped off the
walls. Sometimes just to tire their kids out, they just let them run up and down the...
Is this real?
Mm-hmm.
Down the corridor.
Down the corridor, yeah. Which, fine, you know, kids will be kids, but also... Please, take them to the park.
And do they – are they otherwise friendly?
I don't know. I've only ever heard them. I haven't met them.
And did the whole
– And I've been avoiding it.
Building. So these fire alarms and these buildings, that's when it's independent, isn't it? No one's called.
No,
it's
no one's
called. It's an automatic
yeah.
sitch. Yeah.
So I don't know. So we've had – The plumes have brought in the fire brigade and also the woman who put on the pizza and then passed out drunk. So the fire alarm's going to go off one day and it's going to be a fire and they're not going to come.
She could be – the pizza woman in this constellation of idiocy, the pizza woman is the best. You make her the fire warden as far as I'm concerned.
Give her the hat, yeah.
But this family is making me upset.
Yeah, you're upset. I can't – I'm sleepless nights.
Do you reckon they're spying on you? They're like, oh, Bronwyn's just nodded off. All right, quick.
It feels like it.
As you can.
They're just at the door.
Bang, bang, bang.
I think they are. I wouldn't be surprised.
Imagine thinking that you can hide.
Insane.
From the fire brigade.
I've never – if anyone's going to be able to get your door down.
What do you do if you're the fire brigade and you know someone's hiding in there and they've – Probably maybe accidentally set off an alarm.
Well, obviously accidentally.
Do you get the battering ram?
We've got the battering ram. Are you in there or not? Yes. How's their acting? Are they Meryl Streepish when they go, oh, we didn't hear you?
Oh, I would say maybe more a like a Home and Away level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah. So, you know, passable.
Yeah. there could
not
be
an Oscar,
there.
But a Logie, yeah.
Yeah, right. Holy mackerel. All right, well, they've got enemies now in the whole building.
They've got enemies. Hopefully the whole of Melbourne by the end of this, but yeah.
And to what degree does the integrity of the walls or the, you know, is playing a role? Do you think they supersede this or is there something a little bit shoddy about the construction?
No, I think once ever, because you don't really hear anyone, so once you're in the apartment, you're fine. It's the big echoey corridors
mm-hmm.
that are the issue.
Okay.
So, but they are really making a go of it. And there are a few doors, like it's not even, they're not my neighbours. They're like a few doors down.
And you're changing your sleeping routine to accommodate their arrival at home.
Yes, it's so loud that it's like there's no point going to bed because I will be wide awake. And then even then they get me.
It's like a movie. Brats.
It's a horror movie.
All right, keep us posted.
Melbourne's own Triple R.
We welcome to Breakfast as Friday Funny Bugger and Bronwyn Cuss, Adelaide cohabitant. Alex Ward, morning, Alex.
I thought you'd forgotten who I was for a second. I'm Alex. I'm good, Danny. How are you?
Oh, all right. What's it like?
Living with Bronwyn.
Yeah.
She's very strict.
Yeah, no, keep her in line.
She's not at all. No, we barely, like, we sort of, you're a busy enough person that we didn't see each other too much. You weren't like.
Yeah, I was out and about.
Yeah, I was the one who was, I was the annoying housemate that never left the house.
Cause yeah,
I was
she doing, took over the
I
lounge room.
2 days I was sort of working remotely, and so I was just in the apartment all for like 9 hours straight.
Yeah.
So I was the annoying one.
Taking meetings.
Taking so many meetings.
Yeah. Bronwyn was busy. Bronwyn had to make herself busy.
Just put a sign right. up on
there. She was finding excuses to leave.
I got
to
get out of here.
You've got to get your steps up. No, it was fun. It was actually fun. I feel like.
Yeah.
I haven't shared with someone in an apartment for a while, actually. So it took me back to my youth a bit.
It's good to share. It's good again. To blow out the cobwebs, isn't it? And see what you like, that you're not stuck in your ways.
Although I will say, did you end up eating any of the yogurt that I bought us?
I actually didn't end up. No, I didn't have think any you did, yogurt.
That's fun, but, I mean, financially, Bronwyn contributed to a house yogurt, if you will. And I remember looking at it every day and I was eating it going, I don't think Bronwyn's touched this yogurt. So my question is, did you ever really want the yogurt? One, that was my first question. Mm-hmm. Second, did you intend to eat the yogurt? You never got around to it. Three, I hope you're not expecting any money back. It's not a question, just a statement.
I had good intentions, but then I end up going to the market every morning.
Yeah, that is. I mean, and this is really what it is living with someone. It's like realizing what good intentions they have, I think. Yeah. But I also did know, like, not to make you feel guilty, I felt a lot of pressure to finish that yogurt alone.
It's a lot to digest.
It is.
Did you get through it?
No, but also.
Well, did you bring my bit back?
My wife, Hannah, came for the last 2 days and then we just left her there. So I think she just had to deal with the yogurt.
So she just kicked the yogurt down the hill.
So I just passed that problem on. Now, today, I've planned.
Oh, wow.
Well, barely. Usually I just come in and talk about some interactions I've had. But this time I've sort of turned my little interactions into a play. Very short, I don't know what we call them. Tiny plays.
Tiny plays.
I wish I had some alliteration.
Playlet.
Mm.
So, Dan, maybe you could, like...
Oh, how exciting.
You can read the scene descriptions.
Out. Someone's been to Office
And, Bronwyn, you can be anyone who isn't Alex, and I'll be Alex.
All right.
Does this play have a title?
It's at the top. Okay, I'll start. You're reading it.
Okay.
So you can bring
us the play is Grass. It is we're in the interior of a fruit shop. It is day. Mm-hmm. Alex approaches the cashier and places her items on the checkout.
Hi.
Wet out there, isn't it? Constant.
Yeah. Oh, well, the grass needs it.
I don't have any grass.
Oh, me neither. I just meant like in the park and stuff.
There's a long, awkward pause.
Card.
Yeah, car. This is an interaction I had in the wonderful community of Fairfield a few weeks ago. I went up to pay for my fruit and it was raining so much, right? And I was just, that's what happened. It was wild. But I was just like, yeah, good for the grass though. And she was so annoyed at me and she went, I don't have any grass.
Crazy.
If you work at a fruit shop, you might care about rain a little bit.
Yeah, I know. But I was like, the crazy thing is I don't have any grass either. Mm. I've got fake grass in my courtyard. And I was like, I know the feeling. Don't take it out on me. I thought it was just something you said.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, how many people come in boasting about their grass to her that she's like at the end of her tether?
She's furious.
She's really stressed about not having grass. I mean, that's you would think that you might have some abstract empathy for broadly grass that is not within your, specific dominion.
You get it?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the grass.
Also, Fairfield, a lot of green space in Fairfield.
You would think
someone in Fairfield would approve.
I'm guessing if you said that to her, I'm guessing she would go, I don't live in Fairfield. I've been back to, it's a great fruit shop. I've been back there since. And now I just, when I see her, I've like actually gone to the other lane because I'm scared I'll say the wrong thing.
It doesn't feel like you can say the right thing. I mean, this feels like entrapment.
Because she's asking the topic.
Exactly, yeah.
She introduced the weather chat.
Yep.
And then she shut down the ripple effect of the chat.
Maybe she hates grass. Oh, but no, she wanted it. She didn't have any. She was
She's
sad.
Got a chip on her shoulder about not
She
grass.
Definitely. You know what she needs to do, guys? Touch grass.
Yeah.
Well, she can't. She hasn't got any.
Exactly. So dead. That's it. That's maybe where the saying came from.
It's just for her.
Someone ran into her.
I have another one.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
You this is act busy. Two.
This is a different one. This is a different scene.
Yeah, but these are after intimate.
These are all real, by the way. Let's play more memoir.
This play is called Pretend Boyfriend. It takes place in the exterior of a bottle shop car park. Day. Alex sits alone in the driver's seat, staring ahead, window down, mildly disassociating. A car pulls up next to her. A man gets out and heads into the bottle shop. A woman remains in the passenger seat, her window also down. A few minutes pass. The woman leans slightly towards Alex.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah?
God, they suck at finding stuff. Why do we send them in?
Alex processes this, realises boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I should have just done it myself.
The woman nods, vindicated. Alex waits a beat before putting the window up. She begins to record a video and notices the lady in the car next to her shrug at her as if saying, every time. Note, this is the most most interesting because Alex has a wife.
The end.
Amazing.
Yeah, incredible stuff. This lady, by the way, this is like the reason I lied. It's weird when I'm going to admit on air, I did lie. It's weird the times I find myself lying. It's never when it matters. It's never when I need to. It's just that she was like, oh, I bet your boyfriend's taking ages as well. But I think that what happened was the deep shame that I had been sitting in this car park doing nothing.
Oh, so Hannah's not in the bottle, though.
I was alone. I was alone here. I was disassociating. I was just doing that thing where I was like, I'll go in when I'm ready. But I wasn't ready for ages. So she comes and then she's like, oh, she's assuming I'm also waiting for someone in the bottle shop. So she's gone like, oh, why don't we just do it ourselves? And I'm like, yeah. Because I didn't want to admit I'm just there by myself. It's wild then because I had to wait so long. Because I think she thought I was probably not. I recorded a video about the interaction because I found it funny before I'd forget. And then I was like, oh. She actually probably thinks I'm FaceTiming my boyfriend in the shop to be like, what are you doing? Go down aisle 4.
And She's probably sitting there in the passenger seat the whole time being, can't believe he lets her drive as well.
I know. And then also what's crazy is like I had to wait until he definitely came back and he was bad at finding stuff. He took so long just because give off this impression my fake boyfriend was worse at finding stuff than her real boyfriend.
Yeah. What did you chuck in? A big eye roll or something?
Yeah, I was just like, ugh, I know how it is. And then I'm like, oh, every day. I'm like, why didn't you just be like, I'm just sitting here, which is also weird. I think that was weird because it was a boyfriend.
I think that would have been weirder.
Look, I'm obviously, thank you. I'm not into lying, but sometimes the lie is easier than the...
You can tell it's a different day because I presume it was a hotter day than the day that it was raining because you would have to have two windows.
Yeah,
they
were weeks. These were weeks apart.
Yeah.
I don't have wild, weird interactions every single day.
So you had a window down, and she had a window down.
Yeah,
yeah.
But we were like driving a passenger. It's the closest you could get in a car park situation.
I'm loving this woman, by the way.
Yeah,
like,
just leaning in.
She made a mistake, but absolutely fucking going for it.
Oh yeah,
but also conversationally.
But also not. Yeah, she's obviously in the past has gone in herself, and she's like, no, it's your turn.
He can't find stuff and he takes ages. But for him, he's like, if I bring her in, she is going to chat to everybody and we'll be in there forever. So
that's 100% correct. I mean, I think...
I've just taken the opportunity to car to car.
My wife knows how that feels because when she sends me to shops, I'm gone for 4 hours because I'm just sitting at the car park staring out of...
Science.
I daydream a lot. I'm just daydreaming a
lot.
Yeah,
I mean, the time in the bottle-o, quick as.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the car park time.
Do you find it, is that your favourite place to disassociate?
Yeah, the car. Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is why it's wild now. It's moved into a space where you, like, record videos because it's so quiet in the car.
Oh.
So it's almost like a studio.
Oh,
so that's,
nice.
I've used to do VO in there in the past, but now it's like, we've got a quiet place and it's annoying. That's where it's become that because... I'm used to just disassociating. Now I have to work in there.
Yeah. Other people work from their home. It's work from car.
Yeah. But I also get it because you have great thoughts in the car.
I do. I ride a lot in the car.
While you're driving?
I'm pretty good at
multiple. On the roundabout,
I just talk to myself.
To come up with ideas.
I just go round and round.
Have you ever pushed the seat back and really reclined and had a deep think?
I feel like that's a great way to get like a knock on the window.
That might have been a good way to get out of this chat with the woman too, just fulling it back.
Disassociate.
Just chill.
Hey, Alex, where can we see you disassociate on stage?
Never. You can see me be very present and real and funny at Melbourne International Comedy Festival is probably the best one to do here in this city of Melbourne. The Western, 7:30 every night. So in the city near, not far from Town Hall,
nice.
The Western.
Great
it's technically
venue.
A hotel. I don't know.
It's
in there once.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Go in, get a cocktail, Go up, see Alex.
Nice.
Yeah.
Literally anyone.
You can meet my fake boyfriend. He's always there somewhere.
Beautiful stuff. All right, we'll let you get back
in the
car.
Thank you so much. Triple R.
You've been listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters, which is the Monday to Friday breakfast show, broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia. Feel free to get in touch with Breakfasters via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or via the Triple R website.